some kind of mHealth in Latin America project, such as like text messaging, especially for improving health in the primary care system in Latin America. So talking about Latin America, of course, is a broad concept, and there is so many realities, different countries and everything. But I guess the idea to meet with you is maybe to have some kind of a feedback of what are the pros and cons about these mHealth in other part of the world that is that maybe can we can link or relate with the realities in Latin America.
Yeah, sure. Like, well, I'm from Venezuela.
I'm from Chile. Yeah.
So we are taking this new media and development communications class at SIPA, and we were like, I mean, the idea is to explore the topic, but also like trying to make a contribution, even if it's a super humble contribution. Well, we thought, okay, instead of, you know, creating something, let's go with the people that have the expertise, and maybe we can try to focus our little research, because at the end it's going to be a class project on how could we replicate your experiences in India or, you know, I don't know, other countries in Latin America, taking into account the new challenges and taking into account, for example, I don't know, like the family structure and, you know, the relationships inside of them. How can, you know, what is the role that mobile phones are playing in this particular context? And we would like to have more, you know, some guidance about, you know, asking you some questions and, you know, trying to yeah, explore what do you think about it.
Sure, sounds great.
Okay.
Okay, so how do you want to start? Do you want to describe a little bit more your what the product or the service is?
Yeah, so we, I guess at the end, we wanted to have like this proposal of what would be like the pros and cons of having mHealth in Latin America. So our starting point was the pilot project already in place in some countries, such as Mexico, Peru, Chile. Mexico and Peru has project with a mobile phone and pregnancy, like, you know, like teaching pregnant women about like the process, assistance, like in India.
Very standard, yeah, like a baby center.
In Chile, they have two different projects, but they're all like pilot projects. One is for people with diabetes, like to keep track of them and try to encourage the, you know, like they take the medicines, they take care of themselves, and they go to the primary care clinic to have the monthly control or weekly control. And the other one is about like in Chile there was a pilot project about like text message to remind people an appointment that they have in the public system. Just to, so, you know, like the idea was not to, because there was a lot of inefficiency with people don't showing up for their appointments, so that will create some kind of inefficiency in the system. So those two pilot projects, plus Peru, plus what is done in Mexico and Argentina as well, has some baby center using text messaging. So we wanted to have our final product would be this kind of like a wiki website where we want to have what would be maybe the pro and cons about like Latin America and how can you actually scale and what would be the need, I mean the needs and what would you actually need to scale product like this.
Yeah, basically if you need this like in two sentences, because well, as Fernando was telling to you, it's like to develop a framework that could be useful for to apply mHealth in other Latin American countries, or to improve the application, for example, in Chile and in Mexico. So it's only to talk about your experiences, like what is working, what is not, the pros, the cons, the challenges, maybe the opportunities, so we can, you know, with your guidance, we can start, you know, like, making further research.
Okay.
Like, if you can tell us the key points on each part, and what do you think it is like really, really relevant, and where we should focus on.
And okay, so let me first see if I've understood what you're doing. So you're not trying to do any mHealth project in Latin America yourselves.
Yeah.
You are trying to build an online platform for learning that will enable others who are developing mHealth products to interact and learn from the experiences of others.
Yeah.
That's
under the scope of the class project, right?
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So the first thing that you say about, like, we're not doing it ourselves, maybe will be the second derivative.
Yeah, okay.
After this project, yeah, if we, everything goes well, we can start looking for that. So.
Yeah. And then, so for your class project, do you actually have to build this wiki and then
yes.
have all the content?
Yes.
Right, which means in some... And then how do you sort of... market the wiki among the people who you need to use it, and are you creating the content yourself, or do you want the users to actually be the content providers?
We're gonna provide some context,
right, and then they add to it.
And the marketing we haven't decided yet.
Right.
Well, we don't know. I mean, since we don't know yet, what would be like? I mean. I guess for the class project, the wiki would be enough, but
right.
we want to see if this can go farther after the class. So
right.
for the class, we will have this research with the content that we're going to have interviewing people, maybe our own research about what is good and what is bad on this, and
yeah.
why it should be applied or not in Latin America. And then will be something else that we want to have after the class is done. We can do something else. So that's
okay. And so your questions for me are around sort of how to make this wiki successful in
a lot of it.
How do you go about doing that? Or are you more interested in some specific content learnings that will be part of what you write as content for the wiki?
Yes, we will be interested in, you know, to have some content from you, like, you know.
Yes, as an expert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some context of what should people should be looking when they're thinking on this kind of project.
Right.
And what is like the thing that you have to avoid thing that you have to actually do when you're thinking and doing something like this.
Sure.
Okay.
So, because almost before we get to that, you will likely be aware of other organizations that are acting as conduits of information around learning on mHealth.
Like mHealth, yes.
And others.
Yeah.
And so how will you link up with what they're doing? Because I think for any sort of wiki, there's, are you going to convene original content from external sources? Or are you just going to be a platform to post content that is already out in the public domain and you're bringing it into a central space?
No, I guess it's like we're going to combine content that is maybe... Because for Latin American countries... Maybe there is no like a place where you can go and look for this mHealth as an aggregate view of what is going on in Latin America. There are, some pilot projects here and there, but there is no like a place where you can see, okay, if you want to go into Latin America for mHealth, look at here. This will be a good starting point for the information that you need to maybe start a project in Latin America related with mHealth. That will be probably... For the scope of the class, that will be probably a good thing to do with the wiki.
No, that sounds great. And I'm sure once the wiki becomes established, I can see a lot of organizations wanting to link to it or to promote it, whether it's mHealth Alliance or something like the Drumbeat, the Communication Initiative,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the Latin American organizations are kind of passing through those sites, I would imagine. So I'm just thinking again, just sort of further down the line of how
that's great.
Get all
that's
together.
Great.
And if you ever need help, I can send a note to Drumbeat or something.
That would be really nice, yes.
I actually just met with the convener yesterday who runs Communication Initiative and a woman who runs an organization in Colombia that uses media for social change.
Okay, great.
So, anyway, so would you like to then? Do you want me to just start giving examples of pros and cons?
Yeah, that would be good. That would be a good start, I think. Yeah because I know the contents and the countries are different, but probably there are things that we can actually, you know, figure out what would be viable in Latin America or not, right?
Yeah, because I almost think there's got to be a lot of resources out there. So you kind of just downloading what I say in this, you know, in the next 20 minutes will only scratch the surface.
No, of course.
No, definitely. I mean, like, we don't want something. For example, you have a great policy brief on mHealth, like, published in February. So so we want your, like, more than what you did or what you, it's like your reflections. Mm-hmm. Or when you see all these experiences, like, together and...
Yeah. Okay.
You know, like, what do you think?
Maybe you're gonna say
going
like,
to be useful in the future. I mean, like,
maybe you can say, don't do this in Latin America. It's not gonna work. Or you say like, if you do it,
sort of more macro level observations. Okay, that's probably a good starting point. I wouldn't say don't do this in Latin America, but I will say off the bat that Latin America is not a region that we work in, and therefore I don't have a lot of firsthand knowledge of what's happening in Latin America, mm-hmm. because our organization, that's pretty much the one region where we don't work. Mm. So I haven't been engaging in the conversations and the case studies and the experiences of Latin America.
That's like for resource reasons or for like you take the decision, okay, Latin America is like a middle income continent, so we're
that's
not going to...
That's one of the reasons, okay. Yeah. I mean, a lot of it has to do with historical links to the region, which is we don't really have any.
Yeah,
as
of course.
The BBC, a lot of our, a lot of the countries where we work are countries where BBC has had its own language service as a news agency and has its own news bureau. And those have often tended to be sort of former British colonies as well, because we get a lot of our funding from the UK Department for International Development, DFID, and therefore we are sort of, you know, we've been, you know, we've had to rely on the overseas development assistance funding priorities of the British government, which again have favored, you know,
all
Asia and Africa as regions, and not Latin America. That's one. And then also, I mean, middle income and you know, there are so many organizations that I think are better placed to do the work than we are, mm-hmm. than to just kind of fly in with no history, no experience, you know, very little, you know, language ability, you know, so all of that. So I mean, we're just really not kind of, we've taken a strategic decision to not kind of expand into new regions, but rather to focus on where we are, what we're good at, where we have a history of working, instead of just going after opportunities and trying to be everywhere.
Okay.
So that's mainly the reason why we're not in Latin America as a region.
And let's say if there is a project in Latin America, is the or in other regions, would BBC Media Action be willing to have some kind of like I don't know, joint venture to call it, sort of like that, or like saying like this is sponsored by BBC Media Action? Have you have any experience like that in other regions, like or not?
No,
it's not.
So we are an international NGO, mm-hmm. which means that every project that we work on is funded by a grant.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found is that the so theoretically we could consider being an implementing organization of a project and getting a grant to work in Brazil. We mm-hmm. we worked in Brazil like once 12 years ago or something like that. And that would then provide us with a mandate to work there, mm-hmm. you know, having a grant. Yeah. However, it's very unlikely that we would even pitch for work in Brazil or anywhere else, because A, you know, people who are going to pitch against us who are there already
of course.
And, you know, are more justified in getting it, for one. and two, even if we were really desperately wanted and we would go there, our experiences that are kind of just the upfront costs of establishing ourselves in a new country, registering with the local authorities, it would have to be a massive project with long-term, you know, investment in order to justify us starting somewhere completely new. And so we think sort of that the kind of barriers to entry are such that it's very unlikely that we would go into that region now. So unlikely. And again, I mean, I was just meeting with this woman yesterday, and she said she would love to have me or my colleagues down to speak at conferences or whatever in the region. And again, so we could probably do that if it was sort of fully funded, but again, it kind of makes it very difficult to justify us using staff time
to
kind of, you know, to invest in activities that don't really relate
to what you're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we just think there's a lot of great talent in the region. You know, there's enough work for everybody. You know, we don't really need to think that we need to be everywhere.
So in the regions and in the country that you were working, especially in India, what can you say about the experience of using mHealth?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I come back to the larger
macro level
issues and some of the trends that I'm also seeing in the mobile health space. I think for anyone who is looking to develop a mobile health service, they need to be very clear whether they are developing a product or a service that is in the demand side versus the supply side service. So let me explain what I mean by that. In healthcare, as in any, you know, as in the free market, you've got supply and demand, right? Mm-hmm. And in health and in mHealth, you can have demand, you can have mobile services that support demand, then you can have mobile services that actually deliver health services. In the demand side, that's things like the provision of information and provide information with a view to creating demand for services or creating demand for behaviors that aren't necessarily service dependent. So for example, breastfeeding. And the whole behavior change, communication, social behavior change would fall under a demand side service or product. Then on the other side of the spectrum is a mobile health service that is really beginning to get into the delivery of health services domain, which is, you know, using mobile phone as a diagnostic tool, for example. Or is using it to collect and collate data around, say, birth registrations or vaccinations, and you know, kind of getting in the world of big data and getting into the data then links to the delivery of services. You know, did you get your vaccination? Did you register this birth? That type of thing. So you're moving away from information provision to data collection and service, and providing a service. And in that case, it's providing service to the healthcare system as well as to the patient, because it has to do with patient records, medical records, and that sort of thing. So if I can sort of summarize the mHealth field and the scope of it, you've got on the one end the demand side, and on the other end you can go really sophisticated where you're using mobiles as diagnostic devices or, you know, checking heart rates or whatever. And therefore, looking at this spectrum, the more complex your service is, and the more you get into the service delivery and data collection domain, the more complex the whole project and initiative becomes, And what usually corresponds to that increase in complexity is the technology inputs required, and the more sophisticated the technology needs to be. And by technology, I mean both the handset and the software and the back end and everything else. And one of the main reasons for that is because as soon as you get into anything to do with patient data and medical records, you have all of the concerns about privacy of medical information and all that, as well as sort of responsibility of patient care and ethics,
or
you name it.
Even accuracy.
Accuracy, exactly. And then whereas on the information provision side, you can be kind of pushing out information, and you don't have the, you know, you obviously have the ethical and responsibility issues of having that be true and fair and all that, but you're not, it's not personalized as much as the more complex services are. And so I think as a mobile health kind of project designer, you have to know where you stand on that spectrum and be prepared to assume the level of complexity that is required along that spectrum. So that's kind of one point. I don't know if you want to come in there or just, I mean, just another thing to say is that if you're on the demand side and the kind of social behavior change, and here this is also kind of appointment reminders and things like that.
It's more like a broadcasting, like,
exactly.
Yeah, it's like
exactly.
Broadcasting
communication
media.
On something that can be done on a mass scale.
Yeah.
In the same way that we use TV and video and mobile phones. You can, if you exist in this space, you can actually design in a very low-tech environment, which our experience and what the TED Talk was all about was designing appropriate mHealth interventions for people below the poverty line, base of the pyramid, whatever you want to call them. And because what we did, again, you know, in India was use basic handsets, interactive voice response, you know, low-tech, and that meant that anyone could use it at any time. You didn't need special skills, special software, special handsets. And the beauty of all of that is that you can scale immediately and you have a sustainable solution. So far in the mHealth field, the more complex and service delivery, data collection type mHealth programming is really difficult to scale, really expensive to scale, and many people argue they're not scalable models at all. And so they are therefore probably most appropriate for very targeted audiences, populations, such as, you know, health workers. So not kind of doing something like, so for in India, we're doing maternal and child health. And, you know, in a highly populous state like Bihar, we know that 26 million families in the span of, you know, 5 years are going to be pregnant. You want a solution that can scale to the tens of millions, whereas if you have a country where you're doing HIV diagnostics and HIV is a concentrated epidemic among high-risk populations that are about, you know, 100,000 people, you know, in 3 cities, then you can design according to a very centralized population base. So the mHealth interventions vary considerably depending on what it is you're trying to do, who you're trying to reach, and all of the design elements then, and all the design questions, all the pros and cons, all the things that come after all of this introduction are completely dependent on where you, you know, on that thing.
And do you see any, like, trend in the sense that, okay, so mHealth is moving to the more complex side or to the more basic, or it can be the way that you start basic and you move to complex? Is that a trend?
So this is what I was going to say, what I'm going to make a comment about my observations. My experience is largely influenced by an organization like the Gates Foundation, mm-hmm. which is, you know, in many ways a thought leader in the development space. They're a major player,
yeah.
and especially in the field of public health, and a major funder of mHealth. And, you know, I think kind of are on the, you know, they've got high ambitions. They're not interested in funding a pilot with 26 people in, you know, some remote village and let's hope it works. You know, they are someone who's like, we only support scalable solutions that can deliver impact, and deliver impact that's sustainable and all that.
Yeah.
They're into the disruptive stuff.
Yeah.
My observation, working and listening to them, is they say that if you're going to build a mHealth intervention which requires investments in hardware, software, all the back-end support, all the training and how to use all of that, kind of establish something new in a country, which means linking with the, you know, the regulatory authorities, the health authorities. If you're going to do this properly and you're going to do this at scale, then we might as well combine the supply and demand into one service platform. Because the temptation, whenever you talk to anyone about the supply side stuff, the donors particularly are then immediately jump to, oh, well, if you can do that, then we can also collect data,
yeah.
We can also do this. And so the temptation to deliver services on the same platform that you use to communicate basic health information is very much there. And those who have the resources to develop supply side or data collection side mobile health services are immediately going to try to combine them all in a more complex service. Which is, you know, which I, you know, there are pros and cons to that.
Yeah.
From their perspective, the pro is make a big investment and let it do a lot of things. Our experience is it may be, and this is getting very complex, so I don't know how.
No, this is perfect.
Okay.
Go on.
And this isn't something that has really been talked about in the public domain enough, in my view. I think it's, again, you kind of have to be really into this field to get in this level of discussion. Where was I going? Unfortunately, the temptation towards the more complex, I think, as someone who's created the demand side stuff,
mm-hmm.
is that the this stuff isn't proven or demonstrated yet to be scalable or sustainable,
mm-hmm.
whereas this side is. So I would almost recommend that, well, my view, and I think I make this in the policy briefing very subtly, is that while everyone, all the technologists and everyone else are sorting out the more complex pieces, if everyone puts all their eggs in this basket, and this takes 3 to 5, 6, 7 years to figure out, how many people have died between now and then when we can use what we already have in people's hands now or to address the gaps in demand, to address the social and behavioral needs that exist now? Why not use what people have in their hands now and create scalable and sustainable solutions now on the demand side, and at the same time make investments over here? rather than kind of just wait and do everything there. So here's, I'm putting now my opinion into this.
That's
more
great.
Than,
so you're suggesting it, like eventually they're gonna merge, like because we're seeing that. I mean, in the more complex size, of course, you will need more complex technology. But the trend seems to be that we're having more.
Sorry, I'm just gonna.
Yeah, yeah.
We still have five.
Yeah. So the trend, it seems like we're gonna have more. I mean, complex technology in the hands of people.
Yeah.
So my understanding of what you're saying is like eventually they're gonna merge, but you say like you should start basic.
Yeah.
Because there is a lag of time between like the development of technology and the when they're gonna merge.
Yes.
Okay.
And if I can put it maybe more simply than I just did now, is I think there's way too much overhyping of smartphones and the proliferation of smartphones in the developing world, and the reliance that smartphones are going to solve all the problems. There are some pretty heavyweight proponents out there that maybe I should remain nameless, who say that every health worker in Africa should have a smartphone. And yet, I mean, let's be honest, these smartphones are still out of reach.
Yes.
For the vast majority of people who need this health information now. I think it's foolhardy as a program design to introduce a completely new technology for all of the reasons that I think you understand very well. And because I think one of the biggest pitfalls that I'm seeing is that people are creating fantastic software and solutions that are smartphone dependent or even feature phone dependent. And it looks good on paper, the pilot is okay, but what everybody knows who's kind of been doing this stuff every single day is that it's all of the ongoing backends and ongoing support that's required. That's where all of your resources need to go into. So, you know, you might have a nice app or something, but what we're finding is you then need to have a call center for people having problems with the app. And, you know, it doesn't end with the app. It starts with the app. And the people who have created that app, have they thought through enough all of the other inputs that are required over the long term in order for that app to actually achieve what it was set out to do? And that might be ongoing training, it might be, you know, data glitch. I mean, the guys from like Demagi and Comcare, I don't know if you know these companies, but, you know, the guys that are basically developing the software, they said to me when I interviewed them for that publication was, I mean, that's the thing that is that we're stuck on. Like, that's the hardest bit here. I mean, you can get any wise guy from any university here or abroad to create an app, but for them to figure out all the other inputs that are going to be required to make that thing a success on the ground is the tough part. And then, and not just figuring out, but how's it going to get funded? How is it going to get sustained? Who all needs to be involved in order to make it successful? What's the role of the government? What's the goal of the role of the telecom regulator?
One quick question. Because
my 5 o'clock is here. I'm sorry, but we can.
I know. Super quick. So okay, yeah, you are talking about. I mean, at the end, you can develop a relationship with a text message or with a complicated app. But when we are talking about, you know, how to build like the health network, like the relationship with the person and the mobile phone as a tool for do this, like, what is your like your most important opinion on this challenge? Like, how can you connect? Because sometimes
you have to understand the people who you intend to use your product or service. And for that, you need to do a lot of user testing. If I've understood your question right, you'd mentioned something earlier about just the family dynamic, for example. what does a phone do within a family? And how has the existence of a mobile phone almost changed the dynamic within a family? My creative director in India gives this great example where she says, so we have basically studied how individuals and families and extended families are using, you know, the one mobile phone that they all share. And what happens when a second mobile phone gets introduced? And what happens when a second mobile phone gets introduced to an extended family is all of a sudden you have a network effect. So she gives the story of, you know, an extended family in India, poor farming community, and there's one, you know, they get their first mobile phone. So, of course, it's the male head of the extended family that holds onto the phone. And he takes it out to the farm. But he has no one to call because there's no phone. So then the second you get more income, a second phone comes in. And suddenly, so the guy is out in the field. He's got his phone. The second phone is with the nephew, who's like the second eldest son, you know, or man in the. So he all of a sudden has someone to call. Or say he calls and the wife picks up. And what she said to me, which is so fascinating, she said, all of a sudden, the husband is speaking to the wife in the middle of the day, and it's, hey, how are you? What are you doing? You know, as you start. They've never spoken like that before in their entire relationship. Like they've never spoken at that time of day before.
Of course.
They've never, you know, what are you doing now, he might ask. Mm. Like, he's never had that opportunity to ask her what she's doing in the middle of the day. You know, in real time. And just having that network effect is actually changing people's relationships, even if it's just in a very subtle way. But for us as a content provider, being able to understand what that all means and how it's changing people's lives will help us to make more meaningful and relevant content. And so what we need to do, so that's just almost a frivolous example. What is a more strategic example, which influences business models, partnerships, strategic partnerships with mobile network providers, is we needed to understand exactly if you have a prepaid mobile phone and you earn, you know, X dollars a month, how much money do you have in your balance on any given day, or when do you top up? Because if I'm providing a service that's a subscription-based service, for example, which a lot of these baby center services are, you need to have, you know, 2 cents on your, you know, on your phone. And if you don't, then you don't get the message, and your product or your service kind of fails, and the information doesn't get reached. Yeah. If I program it so that the message I send is actually sent in the morning compared to the evening, when are they more likely to have their balance? If it's a pregnancy message and it's going to the man's phone, is it better that we send it to him in the evening when he's come home from work, and when he hears it, he could literally pass it to his wife, or he could at least verbally communicate the same message to her? So understanding all of these things about, you know, what does this do? What does this mean? And where does it go in the day? How much money is on it? How likely am I to share information that I've received from it? If I pick it up and I have a subscription service and I'm not the person who signed up for it, do I think it's spam and immediately hang up on it? Because a lot of people think, I'm being charged for this call, not knowing. You know? So
yeah.
There are all these, like, amazing data points that need to be found out in order for you to design a successful service that's going to be relevant, appropriate, and impactful. So to come back to your question, you've got to do your user testing, your audience, your search, your population, whatever you want to call it, and whatever methodology you choose to know, you need to understand that. And that's why I'm really wary of apps and stuff that just get developed by someone, you know, smart kid, you know, in another part of the world, or intended for someone else, without really any knowledge of how people are going to interact with that.
And could you give us just one line of how do you deal with the phone companies about this? Like, how do you actually go and say, okay?
This is in one line. Well, the one line is, I mean, it's a massive time commitment. It's a massive time commitment to bring them on board. If it, you know, we ask in India. So in India, we got all the mobile operators on board. All of them negotiating a discount. All of them negotiating common short codes. Completely unheard of. And if anyone asks, you know, my colleague basically did those negotiations when they said, you know, what does it take to do that? And she just said, literally hundreds of hours. Hundreds of hours of
because what is the incentive?
Talking to them, emailing. Well, no. So we needed to develop a business plan.
Yes.
And pitch them a business plan in commercial terms. Mm-hmm. I mean, doing the whole, you know, corporate social responsibility thing is really not going to cut it. And so we had, you know, we through partnerships devised a business plan where we felt confident that the cost of the service to our target population was at the right price point, but was also at a price point that was going to get the mobile network operators to pay attention to us as well and to sign up. It's a sweet spot. And that requires, again, a lot of data inputs, understanding the audiences, understanding the mobile network operators. And in many markets, I'm not sure about Latin America, that data is not available or it's proprietary, and only the network operators do not even share basic information like the call costs and how much does it cost them as a company to field a call between two different people within the network. That's proprietary information that is inconsistent across the network operators because of their different kind of modes of working, and really difficult to find out all that information. So that's kind of it's a one sentence. It's hundreds of hours of figuring out the data points that you need to know, filling in the gaps of the data that isn't available, and then just bringing them on board and bringing them on board through you know constant interactions with them until they actually you know respond.
Okay. Yeah.
Answer your.
Yeah, because I thought, I mean, so there is no, like,
So,